morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrat, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, folks. This is Mike Cosentino. We've given Steve Williamson the morning off. He's off gallivanting somewhere. But our topic today is going to be women in politics. It's certainly I've been thinking about this a lot, and it's a different time. It's a huge change. And we have three women in the studio this morning. I'm going to introduce them in a minute, but I certainly want to give a shout out to we did have the Arizona Blue Concert at Main Stage on Saturday. We had 16 musicians all volunteered their time. It was a wonderful, wonderful music show. We had some of the best musicians in the Verde Valley and some of the best music, certainly. There was some musicians that we couldn't line up because we didn't have enough time. Four-hour show, great music. We did it all for the LD6 candidates. Wade Carlisle and Felicia French and Bobby Tyler were all there, and it was a wonderful party in Main Stage in Cottonwood. I want to thank you, thank you, thank you. As usual, women did all the work, and I'm taking the credit. Just to be clear, Kat Ginzel, I've got to say her name and say it loud. She did all of the work, and as I said, I'm taking the credit. But the Arizona Blue Concert went very, very well. If you missed it, you missed a good party. The next party you can make in Cottonwood will be when David Garcia and David Brill come to town. They're coming with, right now it's scheduled at Ledbetter Law Firm, once again in Old Town, just down the street from the Red Rooster where we have our meetings, Red Rooster Cafe. But Ledbetter Law will be hosting David Garcia, candidate for governor. He's finally coming to the area. I've certainly heard a lot of people ask, when is Garcia coming? Garcia is coming October 18th at 2:30 p.m. He'll be at Ledbetter Law, which is somewhere on North Main, right down the street from the Red Rooster, like I said. Right, kind of hard to miss if you get to Old Town Cottonwood. But we'll be in the conference room. This is kind of the Davids and Goliath, as far as I'm concerned. You got David Brill running for CD4 against Paul Gosar. You got David Garcia running for governor against Doug Ducey. And come listen. We're calling it, they're billing this as a town hall. So come with some questions. The candidates will be accessible. You can ask David Garcia how come he's not answering all those terrible ads that they have on TV about him. And whether those ads matter. At this point, there's so many, they're so bad, they're so mean, they're so silly in some cases, that I'm not sure that voters aren't smarter than that. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. I mean, I'm not sure that you can underestimate the voters. So we want to talk about some of the changes in politics, and certainly one of those huge changes on Democratic Perspective this morning is women in involvement. This is the year. As we're all going to talk about in a second, it's a year for lots of changes. You know, people on social media make a lot of jokes about a blue wave, and I don't know if it's a joke. I'm thinking it's not a joke. I'm looking at yesterday the Maricopa County. You know, we all labor up here in Northern Arizona doing what we do for political activism, but there's 4.5 million people down there. So once again, you don't need to be a genius campaign organizer to realize there's more votes down there than there are up here. But many, as many politicians in Arizona have learned, many elections are decided in places like Sedona, like Cottonwood, like the Verde Valley, like Yavapai County, because we are so evenly balanced in places like Maricopa County. So they come here. They know that the difference is on the reservation, or it can be in places like this. So we matter. But Fontes talks about, he says, I'm going to read this right off of his social media post. In August, we counted 699 ballots. Excuse me, 699,000 ballots. That's 144 more than 2 years ago. So in the August primaries, Maricopa County counted almost 700,000 ballots. That's 144,000 more than in 2016. Nearly a 25% increase in just 2 years. In 2016, people could only vote at one location on Election Day. In 2018, voters can vote valid ballots at 40 vote centers, plus their assigned locations. That means that each voter went from 13 locations and hours a day to 533 location hours on Election Day. He said this voter access is way higher in 2018 than it was in 2016. And he goes on to give himself a pat on the back, which he should. This is how you protect democracy. This is how you get the best from your people. This is how you use technology. So at least in Maricopa County, in that huge vote center, where all those votes are, there's a little ray of sunshine, folks. 25% increase. We've heard some different. We do have three local political activists in the studio this morning. We're going to ask them to introduce themselves first, starting with Holly.
Good morning. My name is Holly Plug. I've lived in Sedona for 5 years, and I've been active almost all that time. But in my past life, I started with the election of Robert Kennedy to the Senate in New York State when I was in high school. And I've never stopped.
I saw Robert in high school. He came to my high school.
I went to D.C. to college so I could work for him on the Hill.
Oh, there you go. Oh, good job. And?
I'm Ellen Ferreira. I've also been in Sedona about 5 years and have been a political activist most of my life. George McGovern's campaign was my first. I worked on Capitol Hill for 5 years for Bella Abzug and then for Barbara Mikulski, who is the person who has the female that has served the longest in the U.S. Senate, 30 years.
Wow. I'll be darned. Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. And?
And I'm Kathy Kinsella, and I've lived in Sedona full-time for 3 years and for about 7 years part-time before that. I've been in, like Ellen, my first campaign was McGovern in 1972. I was 10 years old and charged with giving out all of the bumper stickers. If you remember, bumper stickers back then were really big, that you would actually take wire and tie them around fenders. So that was my start. And I've been active in government and politics ever since and held elected office back in New York. And I'm a keen political observer of everything going on here. And I want to go back to something that you started saying at the very top of the show. You talked about ads, negative ads that are going on.
Right.
And for me, watching women in politics in this very pivotal year for women, the negative ads against women are particularly disgusting. I'm going to use that word very purposefully. Mm-hmm. There's an ad against Kyrsten Sinema, and if you're running a negative ad against a man, do you bother to point out what they're wearing? That pink tutu ad, personally, just gets under my skin like nothing else does. Chalk on a blackboard. Because I just think it not only does it misrepresent facts, but it goes for something very typical. You go after a woman's appearance. What was she doing? Not what was she saying? Yeah. That whole ad is misleading because it does not focus on what she said or what that event was. It goes on to imagery, which is something that women have been battling in politics and government for many, many years.
And Hillary Clinton is the prime example of that. More comments about her clothing than her issues. And it really is unfair and insane. And most neutral observers, anyway, realize that. I did hear a nice, just to give a little boost here, I heard a wonderful Kyrsten ad on this radio station coming in this morning. By the way, it's in her voice, and she's doing a sort of you've heard the theme before. Martha McSally is a lying person and will say and do anything to get elected. And it's a nice, solid ad about this is sort of kind of capitalizing on that Arizona thing. This isn't how we do things, and this isn't how things should be done. The good news, I guess, for women in politics on that theme is one way or another, we're going to wind up with a woman senator. I guess that's good news. I want to kind of introduce this, and then I want to hear about some of the things that are going on. You guys have some statistics and things, but it's so different now. I can't imagine. I'm seeing friends posting stories on social media about their most intensely personal experiences with assault, for want of a better term, and so many and women I've known for many years are telling about multiple assaults that I had no, it wasn't part of anything certainly we talked about, wasn't. And all of this is, so this Brett Kavanaugh experience, this, and men are, dismissing this as, and they're celebrating, in some ways, in some places, Kavanaugh's appointment. And yet this incredibly, and I want to say, use the word embarrassing, moment in American politics, this disgusting display, to take Kathy's word, of this man who should have never been nominated for this particular office, and certainly wasn't vetted. If he was, they don't care. And so all of this comes into play. I know I'm bringing up 85 points here that you can all respond to. But the Me Too movement, the whole Harvey Weinstein thing, the Brett Kavanaugh, there's just, to be a woman in any sort of public life these days, is different. I think I'm struggling here as a guy that's been commenting on politics for many years here at Chasm on this radio show. But, it's so different. I don't have a roadmap here. So I'm going to ask the women in the studio this morning, Ellen and Holly and Kathy, help us here. Help us understand what's going on.
Well, there's a phrase that I have always just railed against since childhood, which is that boys will be boys. That phrase is, what that really means is we accept bad behavior because we expect bad behavior.
Yeah, right.
That's what that means, if you just want to break it down. And I think you have that going on here. You pointed it out. There's almost a camaraderie above men. They survived this. They got through another one.
That's right. That's right.
You know, and that's becoming more what's talked about than the Me Too movement is being spoken about. And we can't let that happen. We can't let women's experiences take second fiddle here. It has to be up front that women have, especially in politics, women through life endure miscegenation, and they endure just bad behavior. But in politics especially, because when you're trying to break through, when you're trying to get that seat at the table and you're trying for that equal representation, there's pushback. And that pushback happens in violent ways. That pushback happens in very downtrodden ways. I mean, it's just unacceptable behavior that this is even being touted as something that, okay, Kavanaugh got through, it's all okay, we're safe from that traditional perspective. It's not safe. Our society is not safe as long as this is what's going on out there.
Well, the fact that Donald Trump could get elected after the Entertainment Tonight video came out,
And
people saw him for what he was, and evangelists and conservatives and lots of people voted for him anyway, disregarding that, is very telling. But what that did was, I think it energized women all over the country. And that began at the first Women's March in January of 2017.
Thank you. This is Ellen Ferrara talking, and we want to thank you for going back to the original, going to the source here. We're talking about kind of current events here, both with Me Too and with Kavanaugh, but you're going back to the whole candidacy and election of Donald Trump, which you should do. This is when it started going south, I think. My question is going to be, and I want you to finish your thought, is will it matter?
Well, the Entertainment Tonight tape didn't matter. The Kavanaugh assault didn't matter. And what we have to rely on now is getting people to vote. And if they're disgusted and they're upset, the only thing that they can do is to volunteer, to work, and to vote. Show up at the polls. That's the only chance we have.
Agreed.
That will make it matter.
So, Mike, it did start in 2016 with the election of Donald Trump, and that energized women across the country. So there are 3,260 women right now running for local races in 46 states, and that is higher than ever before. And more women have been nominated by their parties and got through the primaries than any time ever in the history. And that includes both Republicans and Democrats. So it's not just, Democrats. However, I do think it matters. I do think, despite the fact that Susan Collins was one of the swing votes.
Well, some of us might say Joe Manchin, by the way. We can have this argument over coffee later. But
despite that, I think that the influx of women in elected office will make a difference, because I think women think differently, act differently, have different values. And I think it will make a difference in the policies and the approach.
No doubt in my mind that women in office will make a difference, and do. They're proven over and over again. The studies are pretty clear that society gets a better shake when a woman is in charge of policy. There's always, I don't want to play this too much, but there is a more reasoned approach. I won't say kinder and gentler approach. There's a more reasoned approach when women are in charge, in so many levels. But we got to get them in. That's what I mean by will it make a difference? Will they? So 3,200 women, I want to say that number again. Holly said 3,200 women are running for office in the USA, and it's an all-time high, and that's great. For those that get elected, then we can see changes in those communities, in those states.
Well, let's bring it even home here to Arizona. There are 10 people that you get to vote for running for statewide office. 6 of those 10 candidates on the Democratic ballot are women. So out of, you've got a woman running for United States Senate, you've got Kyrsten Sinema, you've got for Attorney General, there's January Contreras, Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs, Superintendent of Public Instruction, Kathy Hoffman. Corporation Commission has 2 women, 2 African-American women running as a ticket, and that's Sandra Kennedy and Kiana Sears. So 6 out of 10 people statewide that you could vote for on the Democratic ticket are women. And I think that that really is telling that these women decided to run. Some of them, Kathy Hoffman, for example, is a teacher. She's an educator. She's a speech therapist. She's been active on these issues and active within the education system. But, for her to run for office, she said, things have to change.
Right.
This perspective has to come up there. Women feel empowered to run. Empowered's not the right word. We are empowered, but we're galvanized. And that's really the better word, because we're moved by this.
Hold on to the Kathy Hoffman race for a minute. Here's a case that I think, to me, brings it into focus as far as women's role in politics in 2018. You got a guy, David Shapiro. You got Kathy Hoffman in the primary. The differences in their policies, I don't believe, were that great. They both had about the same thing. She, as far as I'm, came out of nowhere. He was a candidate before. He was the Arizona candidate, the strong, the white male, that looked great in a 4-day beard, but and she beat him. by a couple of percentage points. It wasn't a squeaker. I mean, it was like 52-48.
You said something important there, though. You said that the platform wasn't different. So that's one of those instances of all things being equal, you know, where did voters choose to go?
Exactly.
And again, it was that galvanization that I think did help, you know, Kathy Hoffman succeed. But it's important to know that she's a qualified candidate. She comes from that system. She knows those issues down. I mean, it was a head-to-head race.
Well, and that's it. So I think you can draw the conclusion that more women are out and more women are voting. You know, Fontes, the Maricopa County Recorder's numbers tell us one story. We have local numbers that tell us pretty much the same story, that more people are voting. And I don't know that we have numbers yet, at least we don't have them in the studio, how many of those people are women. And we've also mentioned that women don't always support women. Some point in the show, I want to bring up what I consider a horrible thing, that the people that are doing the Women for Kavanaugh thing. After this testimony, after the corroboration of the testimony for a Supreme Court justice, to have women not supporting women, what about that?
I don't think you're ever going to find anything that will totally unite all women. Remember Anita Bryant? I mean, she was against everything that the feminists were for.
That's true.
And you've got Phyllis Schlafly's out there, and there are a lot of women that are not feminists per se. They don't believe in women's health rights and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So you've got, you know, every different shade of woman. You can't just generalize. They're all different.
That's a good point. And there's bank to be made, as they say, of taking the other side, because the men in charge with the money will pat you on the head and give you some reward.
We're all united for Wade Carlisle, who is running against a woman, Sylvia Allen.
That's good.
Sylvia Allen is not who the women of that I
not
talk
a friend
to
of women.
Want
she is
to
not
represent
a friend
us.
Of children.
Education, not a friend of education,
right.
Public
right.
Education.
Mm-hmm. Right. So she's just because she's a woman doesn't mean she automatically gets the support of women.
Okay. Good point. Thank you. So Women for Kavanaugh, they can do what they do. I believe the numbers are small, but the media is all over it. And certainly some people take away from that, but the things that they shouldn't.
You know, Mike, when Trump got elected and the Me Too movement really started then, I can recall a social media blitz about people coming out at that point talking about assault and talking about what had happened to them. And so many people locally were brave enough to raise their hand and say, I was assaulted. And almost every woman I know had some form of harassment or assault, myself included.
Yeah. That's the amazing part to me, is that there were so many, as you said, women that you know. Well, I want to mention that a lot of what we see here in Sedona came out of the Women's March. You guys helped organize the very successful.
And we will have the third annual Women's March this January.
January 19th.
19th or 20th. We're still debating that. But it'll be that weekend, 19th or 20th. Everybody mark your calendars, because we are looking forward to this being a very celebratory march.
I want to mention that original march, you know, you had 1,500, I mean, in mm-hmm. this little town. I was part of it. I was walking. It was an amazing, amazing event. And part of it was against, like, the originator of all of this, it seems like, all of this hate, and Donald Trump was sort of certainly the instigation that women could see, local women could see, women nationwide, women worldwide could see that who he was. And this was not, this was, you needed to say something. We needed to speak up. And in this case, the local women organized it. You got anything figured out for the third one yet? I mean, what's going to happen?
We know that the weather will probably be bad because that's part of our tradition now. We get snowed on, we get rained on,
but it doesn't
matter because it doesn't dampen our spirits.
It didn't.
Not at all.
It sure didn't.
But can I just say that after that march?
Yes.
The women that marched and many of the men did not go back home and say, well, that was good.
Yeah.
They went right to the door office. They signed up in droves for the League of Women Voters. They have been knocking on doors throughout the country to energize people to make sure that this election will turn things around.
Thank you for, yes.
They're not being complacent. And if you go into the door office, if you go to the many meetings that we all have,
yes,
it's overwhelmingly female.
Yes.
As you mentioned earlier,
yeah.
We are doing the heavy lifting now.
Yes. ADORE is the Democrats of the Red Rocks, in case anyone doesn't know what it stands for.
Yes. Dora is one of our supporters. We it's a good segue here. We'll mention that right here. We want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks for their support of Democratic Perspective. I also want to mention that Saturday in Cottonwood, thanks in large part to people in here and in Sedona, there were 70 people. 35 teams went out knocking on doors in Cottonwood. Basically, they covered Cottonwood. They knocked on 700 doors that morning. So I don't know how many, we don't have a count on how many people that is, but at each door there's more than one person. And we're talking about a town of 11,000 folks. So Cottonwood got pretty well covered on Saturday, thanks to Leah Hammond and Kathy Rutherford, a couple other women organizers who aren't here this morning. So certainly a lot of my information and a lot of my support comes from the League of Women Voters and Women's March Sedona and the Indivisible groups, which seem to be women. And certainly when I've been holding these meetings, as we know, at the Red Rooster of the Yavapai Democratic Party - Cottonwood is what we call ourselves. And once again, we do have men and women. We have some young people coming, which is very exciting. So it's, I don't know, and they're coming because they're afraid, they're angry, they're lost, they want to do something.
But you hit it on the head as well because you said excited. It's an exciting year because people can sense that there's change and there are exciting candidates. Again, I go back to this list of women specifically. I mean, just let's take, for example, Felicia French. Felicia French is a retired colonel, Army colonel, medevac pilot. When she gets up and tells her story and tells how what she had to do and how persistent she had to be in order to get into the training program to become a helicopter pilot, well, that kind of persistence is exactly what she's going to bring to state government as well. But, I mean, here you have somebody who was retired and sitting there who, again, said, I can't sit here. I have to become a part of this. I sense change. I need to be a part of the change. That's what she's running for a change in government. I mean, again, so qualified.
Felicia impresses me. Now, we were in the Arizona Guard together. She made a lot more rank than I did, by the way. But her last assignment was in Afghanistan. And she has the presence of mind not to wrap herself in the flag. She said it was the worst year of her life. But she also goes on to say she commanded three units, you know, and I was in a enlisted supervisory position, and I know how difficult that can be, at least for a commander. So it's her people skills as much as I don't want to denigrate her ability to fly a helicopter.
No, but her life experience. I mean, she comes as a teacher. She comes as a nurse. She comes as a real person with real experience and wants to make a real difference.
That's right. And she's not a Sylvia Allen. She's not and so much is being made of people who aren't politicians.
Let's talk about Katie Hobbs, who's running for Secretary of State, because she also is extremely well qualified. And unlike a lot of states, Arizona does not have a lieutenant governor.
Right.
So if anything were to happen to the governor, and it has in the past, the Secretary of State moves into the governor's mansion. So here we go with a potential for a Democratic Secretary of State and a potential for a Republican governor. So they don't run together as a ticket. And Katie is currently the minority leader in the state Senate, and she's a former social worker. And she decided to run for Secretary of State because she was concerned about the disenfranchisement of voters in this state under right. the current leadership in that office.
Intentional disenfranchisement.
Correct. And so there's all kinds of rumors about what might happen to Doug Ducey should he be reelected.
Very true.
So this becomes a really critical office in which to win, because that candidate and then office holder may very well become the next governor should Ducey be reelected and should he move on to higher office.
Somewhere. I've only seen one of Katie Hobbs's TV ads, and Katie's been in this office a couple times, in the studio a couple times. One-on-one, she's wonderful. She is knowledgeable. She spoke at the Democrats of the Red Rocks picnic. I've seen her speak other places. I have a but here, and the ad, and what I'm seeing is the Katie Hobbs does not coming across in that ad is the Katie Hobbs that I am thrilled to support. So I'm sending a message out to who's ever making her ads that or to Katie, say relax, you're wonderful, you got this, be who you are, and I think you'll prevail. And yes, I want to reiterate the Secretary of State position. There's all sorts of speculation that Doug Ducey is going to go into some sort of Trump administration position in the next 2 years and a Secretary of State's position. Now, and she did get her opponent is the more conservative, as often happens in places like Arizona. And so I'm encouraged that he is eminently beatable by anybody reasonable. And certainly Katie's beyond that. She brings an awful lot to the office. She knows the job of Secretary of State. She knows how to enfranchise voters. She knows how to give everybody a shot. Katie Hobbs at Secretary of State, and Adrian Fontes and the other county recorders, working together could, at least make it a fair fight. I think the other side work so hard, and this, you know, in Democratic perspective, we need to mention this, I think, every show. Why are they working so hard to keep people from keep people that should vote from voting? That should make every Republican angry, that you take away the basic right. They're trying to, because they have to cheat to win, because their policies stink, because they don't support healthcare, because they don't support the kind of jobs that we need. They don't support lots of things that
take money out of public education and put it in their own pockets.
Amazing the number of state legislatures that are getting rich out of the charter school movement, and that's
including Sylvia Allen.
And we keep saying this over and over. This is like the Joe Arpaio thing. I went to a reporter's thing at Cronkite School. Steve and I both went, and I during that time I said, "Well, how come Arpaio?" And there's a reporter in the back who you see on TV all the time. I can't remember his name. He said, "We've reported on this over and over, and people don't care. So it's not from lack of telling the story. It's whatever impact it has on the electorate, on society." So we want to tell, and certainly women have added to their story, I think, are going to be a factor. I think we'll be studying this. I think this election specifically, and the gender roles or the role gender played in this election for a long time.
We have a lot further to go, but just on an upbeat note,
please.
Arizona is ranked number one for women's representation in government. Number one, Arizona.
Well, and Arizona has a history of electing women. In fact, Arizona gave the right to vote to women in 1912, 8 years before the federal government wrote that into the Constitution.
That's right. Arizona's history of progression, of progressiveness, is well known and should be more well known. But people are always, I shouldn't say it's well known, people are surprised to hear things like the ideas that we've had for a long, long time.
And citizen initiative. I mean, it was something unique to Arizona. It was something progressive that was written into the Constitution, state Constitution originally, but those in power have been fighting to undermine it ever since so that they can retain their power.
Exactly.
But in 1998, we had five women in the top offices in the state. We
wow.
had a woman governor who, by the way, had been the Secretary of State and got advanced to being the governor. The Attorney General, the Treasurer, the Secretary of State, who was appointed by the governor, and the Superintendent of Public Instruction.
Well, I'll be darned. I did not know that.
They were called the Fab Five, and they were sworn into office by Justice Sandra Day O'Connor.
I'll be darned. Well, there you go. That's good. We have it in our past, and hopefully we'll have it in our future. That's good to know. So what locally is going on? We got the Women's March.
Yep, coming up again. That'll be January 19th or 20th. And mark your calendars now and get out your rain gear.
And before that, we have an election to win. Many elections.
What's going on at the Durr office? Suppose we fired up some woman, or anybody for that matter, but maybe women specifically this morning. What can they do?
They can come out and they can campaign for some of these wonderful, again, we've got this great slate of candidates that are going. We've got Kyrsten Sinema for the Senate, January Contreras for Attorney General. Again, somebody who may not have gotten a lot of attention, but she is somebody who is so eminently qualified for this position, a county prosecutor, an assistant attorney general, a CEO in the nonprofit world. She was an advisor to Governor Janet Napolitano. I mean, these are people who deserve support. They deserve us going out there and breaking in that proverbial shoe leather and knocking on doors. We need to get out there for her, for Katie Hobbs, for Kathy Hoffman, for Sandra Kennedy and Kiana Sears. So you can come in and to the Durr office and put packets together. You can canvass on Saturdays. You can canvass on Sundays. Canvassing means you actually go out there, knock on doors, engage with voters. Phone banking we need help with to reach. We've got a postcard campaign that Indivisible is leading and going on. To make sure that your friends get out there and, you know who's running and can make their decisions on who to vote for. We've got every piece of information, every tool that if somebody wants to get involved, we have a way to plug you in.
I got a note the other day from a couple. They said they're taking the day off, Election Day, because they want to help people get to the polls.
And you can volunteer to be a poll watcher or be at the polls. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, tomorrow is the last day to register to vote. So if you're not registered to vote, you still have time to do that. And the early ballots will be mailed this week as well. So people should expect to receive those end of the week, beginning of next week.
And certainly that's one of the big changes is people start voting really soon. And a lot of campaigns have taken them a long time to make that change. In other words, by the time that couple helps people get to the polls, somewhere between 60 and 70% of people will have already voted.
The League of Women Voters is also sponsoring ballot parties, which is nonpartisan. We're asking people to set up a party for their neighbors and friends, maybe up to 12 people, and someone from the league will come in and walk through the ballot with them, not urging them to vote one way or another, but just really explaining the propositions, which can be pretty complicated to understand, and talking about the judges and things that are a little bit lesser known. So if people want to host a ballot party, contact the League of Women Voters of the Greater Verde Valley.
Excellent, excellent. That's I want to kind of underscore that. Because the ballots, I get questions all the time. I get calls every season. Both I got 15 or 20 calls during the primary, and I'll get a couple of dozen calls during the general election. And they will have the ballot in hand and not understand either it's not printed in a way or it's whatever they need. People have sent me pictures of the ballot on their phones and said, "What do I do here?" So, thank goodness for technology. It's really helped. So a ballot party is a really good idea, and good on the League of Women Voters to come up with that, to see this need. I have to admit, most of us just kind of gloss over that, but,
I really want to thank Gail Dugatti at the League of Women Voters for pulling that program together. I mean, she's doing a phenomenal job with that. And it's so important. People know there's a race for governor. People know there is a race for the United States Senate. You can't escape these things. They're on TV. But people do not know that there are five statewide ballot initiatives that you will be voting on. And the drop-off rate, as you go down the ballot, you get what's called the drop-off rate. Less people vote for the things that they're less familiar with.
Right.
So we like to tell people, vote from the bottom of the ballot up to make sure that you're casting your vote on those offices down at the bottom. We have local ballot questions here. Again, five statewide, and there are three locals. So we want to make sure that people do get out to vote. Make sure that you register. Make sure that you know your voting location. Look for it in the mail. Call if you need help.
Go ahead, Nellie.
Something very easy for anyone to do is spread the word through their own social media network. Let people know tomorrow's the last day to register. Let people know who you're voting for. Spread the word. Use your social media network to our advantage.
Yes, good. Really, that uncle, that cousin, that sister or brother that isn't what we call an unreliable voter. Give them a little hand this year. Get them to the polls or get them to send in their ballot. The other thing that happens is those of you on the early voting list, when you get your ballot, send it in. One of the things that I believe that Democrats of the Red Rocks is going to be doing is that when they phone bank is calling those people and saying, get your ballot, send it in.
There's also a way that you can find out whether your ballot was received.
Huh.
You can go online to your county recorder's office and check to see. Now, obviously, they're not opening the ballots and they won't have registered your vote, but
right.
They will indicate that they have received your ballot.
That's great. That's an excellent, because I've had people say, I won't do permanent early voting lists. And they say, because I want my ballot to count. And I end up sputtering, saying, but it does. It really does.
I also want to point out that we recently found out that there were, in the Sedona area, somewhere between 250 to 300 voters whose ballots were received because they mailed them back after the date of the election. So 250 to 300 people's votes were not counted. They did not count. If you wait to vote, you may lose your vote. Make sure you get that in the mail. Get that in quickly. If you have to drop it at a vote center, you can do that. You can drop it at the Sedona City Hall, your ballot off. Don't risk it. Make sure you get those ballots in quickly. Every vote matters, especially in these local elections. Sorry, Mike. These races are won really by a handful of votes. Sometimes,
that's right.
Especially on a local ballot, like a school district budget override, that could be won by 10, 20 votes.
In Cottonwood, you want to drop your ballot off at the Yavapai County Building, right behind it, and right near Garrison Park. You'll see the box. We only got a few seconds left. This is Democratic Perspective. We talked about women in politics today. We had Ellen Ferrara, we had Holly Pugh, and we had Kathy Kinsella. We want to remind you that you can catch the podcast of this show on bbid.org. You can catch all our shows on bbid.org. Go to our website, catch our shows.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.